And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, we're going to have some secrets. Today's volume 194. We do this about once a month, and I always enjoy doing it because I keep little tidbits of information and a lot of things that come my way that are not found in the mainstream media. And if they are, they're slanted a certain way in a untruthful manner. So we like to take them and just slant them back toward the truth so you'll know what's really going on. And, it's amazing the disinformation and misinformation. That's with a D and an M there. Disinformation and misinformation that we're treated to. Of course, the media and even in politics, our esteemed Congress and two political parties believe very sincerely that we are all a bunch of dupes, idiots, and people just to be, have our minds played with. You remember Rockefeller, I think it was, at one of the big meetings of the Bilderbergers called, the common people like you and me, folks. He called us worthless eaters. Worthless eaters. Well, I like to eat, and I don't think I'm too worthless. Maybe he's the one. He's been eating too good. Maybe we better trim him up and put Rockefeller and all the Bilderbergers on a little diet. Take away their money. Put them out in the fields to work shucking corn in the barn and all those things. That would be pretty good for them, wouldn't it? Well, you know, I love to tell the truth. I love to set things right. Jesus said, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Of course, he was talking about himself. Because the Bible also says Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. It goes on, and a lot of people like to cut this part off, but it goes on right there. The very next verse says, "No man cometh unto the Father, but by me." You can't see God. You can't go to be with God when you die unless you know Jesus Christ. Because the Father and the Son are one. If you don't know the Father, you don't know the Son. That's what Jesus said. And if you don't know the Son, you don't know the Father. That's why the incredible number of Jews in this world and truly incredible number of Muslims in this world are in very dire trouble. They do not know Jesus as Lord and Savior. And they, you know, the Jews can talk all day about Jehovah or Yahweh or whatever name they want to give their God. He's not the God of the Bible, because the God of the Bible is one with Jesus. And Jesus was with him from the beginning. That's what John 1 confides to us. So the Jews don't know God. And when the Muslims come up with Allah and say that Muhammad is his prophet and Jesus is some kind of a subordinate lower prophet, well, they're in big trouble. They don't know the Father, whom they call Allah. And you know, it doesn't really matter what you call the Father. You're wrong no matter which way you go. Let me explain to you. Did you know that in Philippians, the letter to the Philippians, Paul said something amazingly powerful. He said, "At the name of Jesus, every knee shall bow, in heaven, on earth, or down below." What name? Jesus. So, you know, somebody wrote me recently, and they said they'd done some kind of a book, The Names of God, and they wanted me to publish it. "Tex, this is a great book. You'll learn that God has over 100 and something names in the Bible, and they call him Jehovah Jireh and all this. And boy, I tell you, it's a powerful book, you know. And I pray all these different names when I pray, and I know God's going to answer my prayers. Not at the name of Jesus, every knee shall bow. Wow. So there you go. There you go. You don't know Jesus. You don't know God. It's as simple as that. God has given all power and authority to his son Jesus, and they are indeed one. The Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost are one. Now, a lot of people say, well, wait, there are three. I can say, yes, there are, and they are one. You say, well, I don't understand that. How can three be one? Well, it's not for you to understand. It's for you to know the truth. You know, there's a lot of things that I don't understand. I mean, scientifically, I suspect that mankind knows far less than 1% of all the knowledge to be gained in the world. Not even that much. Can you, I mean, it's so small. Put about, you know, a zillion zeros with a decimal point in front of them and then finally end with one. One zigatrillionth or whatever you get to. Whatever the mathematicians say is it goes that far. That's how much knowledge man knows. And, you know, we keep finding out new things every day. I mean, even in medicine, cholesterol, it's bad for you. No, wait, it's good for you. Well, wait, some kinds of cholesterol are bad for you and some are good. But hold on. When I was a kid, so many people had ulcers. And the doctor would say, well, it's because of what you eat. Don't eat this or that. One man I know drank beer all day long, had a big beer belly. Remember my dad saying, John, why do you drink so much? My doctor told me it was good for my ulcers. Really? Having a beer belly, that's good for your ulcers and your stomach. That's what he was told. Another one said, I can't eat Mexican food. The doctor told me not to eat anything spicy. It'll upset my stomach because I've got, you know, ulcers. Well, then some little family doctor, not a big research center, not Harvard Medical School, not, you know, no article in the New England Journal of Medicine or the British Medical Journal Lancet. No, no, no. Some little old family doctor in Australia gave a man who had a sore throat or something a particular kind of antibiotic. Man came back to him and said, you know, his patient came back and said, you know, doctor, my sore throat did heal up, but I don't have my ulcers anymore. Do you think it could have had anything to do with that antibiotic you gave me? It cured my sore throat. And my ulcers. The doctor went, Well, he got 13 other patients together that had ulcers, and he gave them all a prescription for the same antibiotic. Guess what? Every one of them had their ulcers clear up. Bingo! And he also discovered he had taken a sample of each of their stomachs, you know, the contents. He found that each of them had a certain kind of bacteria. Every patient with ulcers had this particular bacteria that most doctors up to that time had said, oh, it's not a harmful bacteria, just common in a lot of people. You know, we have a million or more bacteria in us, and most of them are very, you know, actually, they're probably beneficial to us in many ways. But when he saw that one, he realized that's the one. It's that bacterium that causes ulcers. It gets in your stomach. It begins to eat at the flesh and the linings. And then you can kill it with this particular kind of antibiotic. Well, then he wrote a letter because he wasn't a big shot doctor, you know. He wrote a letter to the medical association there in Australia. Well, they almost laughed him out of the country. You know, what an idiot. This little old country doctor thinks he's found the cure for ulcers. What a dummy. Well, anyway, that was about 25 years ago or so. I don't know the exact date. You can look it up in the Wikipedia, the encyclopedia. Turned out he's right. Now he's quite a celebrated man. So isn't that, you see, what the world knows is so little. Well, I'm going to give you some secrets today so you'll know them. You're going to enjoy these things. By the way, while we're talking about people who think they're smart but are not, versus a lot of just everyday people. That's what they call us, you know. You're just an everyday person. Okay. You're just a common man. All right. You're just an ordinary guy, ordinary Joe, ordinary Sally. Okay. I don't mind that. Call me whatever you want. I get a lot of bad names called my way. Don't worry about it at all. But get this. Probably the most distinguished university in the United States is Harvard University. Well, it appears that there's a lot of cheaters at Harvard University. First of all, you know, you don't get to Harvard just because you're smart or because you're intelligent at all. I mean, John Kerry went there. Look at him. Goodness gracious. The only difference between a pumpkin and the contents of John Kerry's head is that pumpkins can be eaten and taste good. In any case, then there's George W. Bush that graduated from there. Oh, my goodness. Have we reached the dunce level yet? Jerry, have you got the dunce cone cap ready? We've already gone past Kerry and George W. Bush. And by the way, both those are Skull and Bones people. Tells you a little bit about Skull and Bones. I remember seeing this guy on TV. Everybody thought he was so smart because he sort of spoke with a British accent. He was an absolute idiot. And he would talk, well, you know that, was it William F. Buckley, conservative from New York? Everybody said he must be smart because he talks so funny. Well, I know a lot of people that talk funny, you know, and they're not too smart. And William F. Buckley was not too smart. But I'm sure conservatives out there will write me hot letters. How dare you? William F. Buckley was my favorite conservative. Yeah, well, he was a dummy. But let's go on. And he was also a dummy because he was not only a Zionist fanatic who went around calling everybody that he didn't like an anti-Semite, but he also was a guy that liked to get away on his yacht and smoke pot. Maybe that's why he talked that way. He was addled brain from all the smoking of pot. Now, there at Harvard University, it seems that in a lot of the courses, I didn't know this, you know, I've taught at three universities and things have changed since I taught. But for many courses at Harvard, the students are allowed when they take their test, midterms, final exams, they're allowed to use their notes, their books, and even the internet. Wow. I think I could make straight A's. Well, actually, I did make straight A's. I graduated summa cum laude, 4.0 average for my university. But the fact is, anybody can make a straight A if you can bring your notes and use them during the test, or you can bring your books, find it, you know, go, you know, the old index and find it. And then there's the internet. If you don't have the answer, go to the internet. You got the whole world's knowledge at your fingertips. And they still cheat. Harvard, for this one course, a government course of all things, told the students, yes, you can use your notes. You can use your books. You can even use the internet. But don't work together, because they didn't want one student giving another student the answer. All these ways, by the way, if I had a student who uses notes, books, or the internet, I would give them an F. They would fail. But there at Harvard, the students are so dumb now, they have to give them all the help they can. And most of the students at Harvard, come on, let's face it. They're not smart. It's not a real bright university. It's just that their parents have given so much money to the alumni fund. That's how George W. got in the college. That's how John Kerry got in. If you have a dad and mom that can give a couple million bucks to the alumni fund of Harvard or Princeton or Yale, you're a sure bet. You know, all you have to do is, on your application form, just write across it, put your name and address, then write across it, my dad gave $2 million to the university last year. Wow, you're a celebrated student of Harvard. You must be a genius to be admitted. Okay. In any case, even with all of these means of making sure that they pass, the dummies at Harvard pass, they still need to cheat more. So it turns out that in this one course, that about half of the 279 students enrolled in this particular course last semester were accused of cheating. Now think about that. Half the students taking a course, this particular course, in fact, 200 and There were 279 that took the course. Half cheated. And because they all worked together and they weren't supposed to do that. Getting their notes, the books, and even the internet to help them wasn't enough. They cheated with each other. Passed answers back and forth. Now, this course was already known as an easy A course. An easy A course is when students tell each other on the internet and all the little gossip chat pages, hey, take that course. That's easy. Now, let me tell you the title, of course, and you'll get a real ribcage, funny from this. The title of the course there at Harvard, that was an easy A, that now we find everybody's been cheating on, is Government 1310, Introduction to Congress. Now, how appropriate. All these students at Harvard are cheating on a course called Introduction to Congress. Well, I think they're learning pretty good what happens in Congress. They're all corrupt and they cheat too. And the students are cheating on the course called, Introduction to Congress. Well, anyway, they may be in trouble. They may get suspended. I don't know. Some may get thrown out of college. I doubt it. They'll probably get their little hands. If your daddy gives another $1 million, we will slap you on the wrist and let you go on to get your degree. Okay, that's probably what will happen. In any case, the students are angry and because they've been ashamed. They're embarrassed that their names came forth as cheaters, were published by the university as young men and women who cheated. How dare the university embarrass me? And 125 students are suing the university for anguish and embarrassment, I suppose. How dare you say I cheated? Of course I cheated. We all cheat. But I'm going to sue you for millions of dollars because you outed me for this. Oh, boy. Well, hey, here's another guy that cheated a little bit. Sun Myung-moon. Now, I've talked a lot about Sun Myung-moon. He's the Korean pastor who said that Jesus failed in his mission. So God called Sun Myung-moon and said, finish the mission on earth as the great father of all the people that Jesus failed at. So that's why Sun Myung-moon, so he adds the sun and the moon together. That's why he had all these ridiculous mass marriages and all that. Well, he's dead now. He passed away early September. All the thousands of moonies out there, I'm sure, in great mourning over it. And all the denizens down in hell are very happy and are deliriously, clapping and partying and everything because they have somebody else to party with. Sun Myung-moon is down there in hell. Anybody who says Jesus fell on their mission will surely fail and go to hell. Hey, how about that for a little limerick, Jerry? Now, boy, George W. Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush were big friends of Sun Myung-moon. Moon gave George Herbert Walker Bush over $1 million in campaign contributions. And Jerry Falwell was given $1 million to fly to South Korea and to speak at a big banquet the Moonies held for Sun Myung-moon. Remember Jerry Falwell, the late Jerry Falwell, the Baptist, the big Zionist pro-Israel supporter. Can you believe? Jerry, I never got my invitation. I would not have gone, but it would have been nice to be asked. I was expecting any time an email, from Sun Myung-moon and his people saying, dear Brother Mars, we will give you $1 million to fly to South Korea and be side by side with Jerry Falwell at this banquet, No, they didn't do that. He was a big friend of Jerry Falwell. Let's see, who else did he give money to? Oh, yes. Who's that guy that wrote all those Left Behind books? Tim LaHaye? Yeah. Tim LaHaye was given tens of thousands of dollars by Sun Myung-moon. People, these guys simply sell out to cult leaders like Sun Myung-moon. By the way, our congressman sold out too. You need to get my video. Well, I think it's entitled Tower of Infamy. I show a ceremony, a religious ritual ceremony and banquet that Sun Myung-moon held, conducted in the Congress. in one of the big halls there, banquet halls, he comes, and one of the congressmen actually bows down before him, and he's wearing this big, Sun Myung-moon is wearing this big golden, you know, crown on his head, and the congressman actually brings him some kind of a gift or something, forget what it was, on a velvet platter. And the congressman gets on his knees before Moon. And they also said that a bunch of Christian so-called pastors and all that were there at Moon's little feast. I said all the Christian pastors that were there. I think Pat Boone was one of them. And all those guys were there. You know, the famous singer, entertainer. He was there. I'm sure LaHaye was there. And others were at this, I call it the Tower of Infamy ritual and banquet. In the Congress, they actually used the U.S. Congress building, the U.S. Capitol. And there they were bowing and scraping and before their great father, you know, Reverend Moon. They said they did it because he was a conservative. Yeah, did it because, I mean, that, would you worship the devil if he was also a conservative? Well, apparently. Hey, folks. What do you think about these Chicago teachers that are on strike? They walked out and left the kids behind. I got a picture of them out there. They're wearing these red t-shirts. They're members of the Chicago Teachers Union. Now, Jerry, who works for us here at the ministry and has for many years, he understands a lot of these things because his wife is a teacher here in the state of Texas. She's a very pretty lady. Very feminine, and she's just a nice person. And I told Jerry I was kidding him. I took this picture because let me tell you, folks, I wish I could show you the picture of the Chicago teachers. They're all holding up their fists like they're all angry and they're mad. They're wearing these red t-shirts, you know, red being the commie color, red communist. And I mean, they look like a bunch of old lesbian hags. I mean, I'm serious. You ought to see. I don't know whether they're men or women. They're Chicago teachers. Now, here's the deal on it. They walked out because they were offered a 16% pay raise, and they said that's not enough. Well, how much were they getting in the first place? Turns out the Chicago teachers make more of an average on the average of a salary than any other teachers group in America. Now, they work 9 months, right? Teachers work, most of them. If they work more than that, they get paid extra. But for 9 months of work, that's 75% of the year, they average, Chicago teachers, $76,000 a year before benefits. You know they get medical, retirement, all those benefits. And all the holidays they get as school teachers. Think about it. They turned down a $400 million deal, 16% pay raise, that would go on top of the highest salary in the nation for teachers. And 400,000 students have nobody to teach them now in those Chicago area schools. These union members, and I'm not totally against unions, but this, my friends, is absolutely ridiculous. I asked Jerry about it. He said it made him mad too. Made him angry. You know, this isn't something that would happen in Texas. He says, teachers in Texas only make about half. You didn't say, I mean, really, on the average, about half as much as these teachers. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, hey, folks, here's something from Personal Finance. You might be interested. Young Americans, 13 to 22 years of age, they have grown up during what is now being called the Great Recession, you know, 2007 to 2012. You remember the Great Depression back in the 1930s and so forth. But now we're calling the most recent financial setback the Great Recession versus the Great Depression. Well, it doesn't appear that young Americans are worried about it. There's a major disconnect. Now, they say that over half the students graduating from college this year will not be able to get a job unless they, you know, do, you know, sling hamburgers or something like that. Think about that. Over half the college students can't even get a job. You'd think they'd be really worried, especially if they look way to the future whenever they retire someday. What are they going to do then? Wow. What's going to happen to them? Well, 40% in a poll that was just taken, a survey, nearly 40% of this new young generation say they're not worried about retirement at all. They expect to receive an inheritance from their parents or grandparents. You know, the average 20-year-old, are you going to be saving money for your retirement someday when you get older? Oh, no, I'm going to get an inheritance. In fact, many of them are saying they don't even need to work. If I don't work, my parents and grandparents will keep supporting me. They'll even let me continue to live at home and party. So millions of young students now, or young people, 13 to 22, I can understand 13 up to 18, but after that, they continue to live at home. Well, according to the studies, though, of financial advisors, they're going to be disappointed. They ask the parents, are you going to be leaving an inheritance for your children or grandkids? And they said they didn't know how they were going to be able to. They're scaling back already on their own expenses. They cannot afford to pay an inheritance. In fact, many of them say they're going to have to work longer, up to 75 years of age to retire. And they're saving for their retirement, and they expect to spend it all on themselves for their retirement. So all these young people out there saying, I don't have to work. I don't have to worry about my retirement. I'm going to get an inheritance. And the people that would give them that inheritance are saying, no, they're not. We hadn't got the money. They're going to be on their own. Folks, there's going to be a rude awakening a few decades down the pike, aren't there? Well, keep moving here. A lot of people have written me about this very scary thing that's going on. Every government agency, it seems, whether it's Social Security Administration, and lately even the National Weather Service, have been ordering guns and ammunition. Millions, millions of rounds of ammunition. Now, it's evidently the kind of ammunition, it's called hollow point bullets. They're designed to cause maximum organ damage. I think they're illegal in warfare, according to international concords. Now, I want you to think about that. The Department of Health and Human Resources has ordered hundreds of thousands of bullets. Of course, Homeland Security has ordered millions and millions. The Weather Service, the National Park Service, I mean, goodness, everybody, the police state is not only here, but they're planning on shooting a lot of us. Millions of rounds. Can you imagine your Social Security worker, the IRS, being armed with guns? They're ready for a revolution. I think they're going to cause a revolution the way they've been acting. Maybe they're right to prepare. But they're not just going to shoot us. They mean to kill us. They mean to shoot us with these hollow point bullets. I mean, your friendly weatherman at the National Weather Service, he's ready for you to come get him. He's ready for a revolution. He's got guns and ammo all stored up. I was talking with Dr. Sneed, a good friend of mine. He said he counted it up, the bullets reported bought so far, and there's 5 bullets for every man, woman, and child in America. The government's bought, stored up for use. Why does the weatherman, why does the Social Security Department, why does the Postal Service, why do they all need guns and ammo? Who are their enemy? Well, it's us. Isn't that a shocking situation? We've gone way past the Nazis or the communists of the Soviet Union and Mao Zedong's red culture warriors. We're way past that. When the weathermen and the postmen are ready to kill us with hollow point bullets, and they're spending billions of dollars preparing for the revolution that evidently is sure to come. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power Prophecy. This is Secrets Volume 194. Stay with us. We've got a lot more of secrets when we return. Hello, friends. Tex Mars again here. You know, a lot of people have asked me, what is the one best book to order and read and study that explains what's going on in the world today with the Zionist conspiracy? Well, no doubt about it. It's the book that I've written. Spent many, many years in working on, researching. It's a huge encyclopedic book entitled Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. It starts out with a six-pointed star because, as it turns out, that is nothing less than Satan's star of Moloch, the great pagan god who was indeed worshipped by the ancient Hebrews. And the ancient Hebrews, according to the prophet Amos in the Old Testament, literally sacrificed their own children to the great god of fire who was called Baal and Moloch. Can you imagine sacrificing your own children by putting them in a great fire? Well, that was done. In fact, it was the first Christian martyr, Stephen, who reminded the Jews and the Pharisees in Israel of what they had done in worshiping the great god of the pagans, Moloch. He said, although God rescued you and brought you out of Egypt, you betrayed God by turning around and going whoring after the past gods. And he mentioned specifically the god that was called Remphan or Kiun, whose name also, of course, as we know from history and from the prophet Amos in the Old Testament, his name was Moloch. Moloch. That's the god of the six-pointed star. And the martyr Stephen actually said, you worshiped in the desert after God rescued you. Instead of worshiping the true God of heaven, you turned around and worshiped the star of your God. Ah, yes, the six-pointed star. That's the god Moloch, god of fire, the god from hell. And the ancient Hebrews worshiped him, and they still worship him today. This is one of the findings in my incredible book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Now, I'm quite sure that I have gone up on the assassination list of the Jews today. And I'm sure there's a big price on the head of Tex Mars. But I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried because I have a better place to go if that happens to me. And if God opens the door and lets them do such a hideous crime, I have a better place to go. A better place. I'm not worried about it. But certainly they have the capability to, let's just say, to terminate a pesky little truth teller like Tex Mars. But until they do, we're going to keep this book circulating. It's on Amazon.com. It was in the top five books of Judaism. Can you believe that? On the bestseller list for Judaism books. I bet that really frosted a lot of the Zionist Jews to see Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star on the bestseller list for Judaism books, because it tells the truth about what Judaism really is and how much hatred the Jews have for Jesus Christ, for Christianity, and for you, dear Christians. They do. They have hatred for you. And there's historical secrets in this book, never ever before revealed. Well, enough said, but please, you've got to get this book. Get one for your pastor if you've got a church you're going to. He'll probably get angry. He'll probably throw you out of his office before he's ever read the book. That's what they do with the books of Tex Mars. You know, they burn them before they ever read them. I don't mind them burning my book. I just like them to read it before they do. Because if you read it, it'll start working on your heart and your mind. Because your heart will tell you something has been faulty all along, and now you know the truth. That's where your mind goes into operation. And your mind begins to discover the dots and how to connect them, how to know true history, not the falsified history that we have today in our schools and colleges, not the kind of history courses where you make an easy A at Harvard University by cheating. Imagine cheaters like that. Hey, by the way, before I go any further, let me just say that a recent survey showed that 62% of all college students admit that they regularly cheat in their classes and test. Did you get that? 62%, that's two-thirds practically of all college students admit, yes, we cheat. What kind of world have we got today? The cheaters used to be the minority. Now they're the vast majority. So friends, when these people, when they graduate and they get to be the bankers on Wall Street, oh my goodness, cheaters. Maybe they're already there. Maybe that's why what's been happening has been happening. But a lot of them will end up as mechanics, and they'll cheat you on your car bill when you need repairs. They'll end up as air conditioning specialists, and when your air conditioner breaks down in your home, they'll cheat you on that. They'll end up as used car salesmen. Well, you know what's going to happen to you then. If they cheat in high school and college, they will cheat you as a car salesman, as a banker, as a mayor, as a city councilman, as the president of the United States. They'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll steal. And almost two-thirds of Americans admit it. If two-thirds admit it, I suspect 90% are doing it. They just won't admit it. Okay, how to get the book? Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star? Well, the book is $25 for a huge book. Believe me, it's worth every penny. $25, add $5 shipping and handling, and we'll get it right out to you. $30 postpaid. Phone us toll-free for the book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Our toll-free number is 1-800-234-9673. You can also go to our website, powerofprophecy.com. You'll enjoy all the news features and things that we've got there on the website. And, of course, you can listen to this radio program 24/7 there on powerofprophecy.com. Maybe you're listening to it right now on powerofprophecy.com. You can phone us toll-free, again, 1-800-234-9673. Write us, send us a check, money order, or cash. We're at Power of Prophecy, or text Mars, 1708 Patterson Road, P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. $30. Say, text, send me Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, and we'll get it right out to you. Okay? It's a big book, very, very heavy, very large. And, boy, this winter, you know, we have winter. I know we're in the fall, it's autumn, but you're going to need a nice book to sit by the fireside and read. Boy, this is one for you. A lot of people read it over and over and over, and each time they get new nuggets of information and truth. All right, let's return to our regular program. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. We have another volume of secrets here. Hey, here's something that came out in the press. It has been published in the mainstream press, but I doubt if they really told you all the facts about it. It seems that a Homeland Security cop, one of the top guys in the department, is suing the Department of Homeland Security chief, Janet Napolitano. Now, this is an explosive federal lawsuit, and I'm sure the liberal press did not really want to report it. You see, three different top male, M-A-L-E, officials of Homeland Security say that they were treated abominably by Napolitano and her girlfriends. Now, I told you when Napolitano became director of Homeland Security that she was a lesbian freak, did I not? An old lesbian hag. She brought her girlfriends with her, lesbian pals, to the Department of Homeland Security. They run the place. And they began to demote and humiliate the men. Now, if I could tell you what the lawsuit says, and I've seen it, portions of it. Oh, my goodness. Even Geraldo Rivera, who's a flaming liberal, even Geraldo Rivera, who's a big pal of Barack Obama and the Democratic administration, even he called them a lesbian cabal. A lesbian cabal. In other words, a gang of lesbians is running our Homeland Security. One of the women, she must be sort of a bisexual. Her name was Suzanne Barr. She's one of the top, well, she's the chief of staff for Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, ICE. Her name's Suzanne Barr. In one case, it's reported that she called one of the male cops. They were at some conference together, and they had individual hotel rooms. She calls the guy up at 3 o'clock in the morning and wakes him up out of his bed and says, get your blank, blank, blank down here to my room and give me your blank, blank, blank in my mouth, down my throat. And I'm not going to fill in the blocks for you. Can you believe that? Get your blank, blank, blank down here in my room and put your blank, blank, blank down my throat. This woman is a sicko. Now, she's been suspended right now, awaiting the outcome of this court suit. But apparently what has been said about her is true. Now, Napolitano refuses to discuss this matter, saying, well, it's all in the lawsuit. I can't talk about it now. I'll bet. But according to these male senior level people in the Department of Homeland Security that are suing Janet Napolitano, she favors her girlfriends, her lesbian girlfriends. And they all constitute sort of a little cabal at the top. Three of the agents alleged that not only did Suzanne Barr, Napolitano's friend, girlfriend, demand that one of the male agents engage in oral sex with her, but in an angry fit of temper, she relocated three of the top ICE agents' offices to the men's bathroom at ICE headquarters. In other words, she threw them out of their office and said, I'm giving you a new office in the men's bathroom. Stuck their desk down there, their file cabinets. Can you imagine they were trying to operate from their desk while other men were over at the urinals and in the johns? This is so sickening. The things that are good. This is how Barack Obama, he handpicked this cabal of lesbians, as Geraldo Rivera called it in Department of Homeland Security. Well, now you understand why they're the people that control the transportation department. They're the ones that make the rules that are enforced at the airport and the auditoriums, where they're feeling up little children and old ladies, where they're feeling of women's breasts and their private parts and men's private parts. They're the ones doing all these grotesque things. The rules were drawn up by people like Suzanne Barr and Napolitano and this lesbian cabal. The lesbian cabal is running America's Transportation Safety Department and all of our Homeland Security. No wonder they hate men so much. No wonder they've especially targeted our military men. It's too much. It's too much to bear. And folks, here's the bad part of it. If you think it will change if Mitt Romney gets in office, you're wrong. You're wrong. Homosexuals, lesbians were favored during the days of George Herbert Walker Bush and George Bush and Bill Clinton. It will not change. Mitt Romney just recently said that he believes that the Boy Scout organization ought to let transgenders and homosexuals into the leadership ranks of the Boy Scouts. He's not going to change anything when he gets to be president. Continue to get letters in, folks, about the Olympics. A lot of people want to know, was there Illuminati architecture at the Olympics? Boy, was there ever. There was some kind of a structure there in the, you know, in all, among all the new buildings that were built for the London Olympics, that could actually be called the Tower of Babel. But here's what a good friend of the ministry, Brian, wrote me, talked about the occult symbolism of the 2012 Olympics. And by the way, the Olympics, the official logo, if you looked at it very closely, it actually said Zion. It was the Zion Olympics. Many people call it the Rothschild Olympics because Rothschild runs Great Britain from behind the scenes. But Brian wrote to me, he said, Dear Tex, there was so much satanic Illuminati symbols laced into the 2012 Olympics, from the opening ceremony to the logo. But what creeped me out the most was the gigantic spider sculpture made for the 2012 Olympics. The name of the hideous spider sculpture was called the Spirit of Zionism. Isn't that interesting? They made a huge spider sculpture. And the mayor of London, Brian says, in May of 2010, even before that, admitted that the spider sculpture was, quote, in keeping with the Zion theme of the 2012 Olympics. He admitted it. Brian says in his letter, he says, Tex, they're not even trying to hide it anymore. They're bold and blatant. They know that we the people are asleep. Wow. Isn't he right? He is absolutely correct. Well, remember Yasser Arafat, leader of the Palestinians, got sick, went over to Europe for treatment in France at a medical institute. Well, only one problem with that. The Jews run France. In fact, until recently, the president of France was Sarkozy, who himself was Jewish. Now it comes out that Yasser Arafat was poisoned with a rare radioactive agent. The Israelis decided it was time for him to go. He was too inflexible. He did not allow for all the Palestinians to become Gentile servants and slaves of the Jews, the Israelis. So they decided to kill him. They got their opportunity when the poor, sick, elderly Arafat was flown to a French medical institute in 2004. The Israelis had laid the groundwork for his death by lethal poison. Now, our good friends at American Free Press, they do a great job. Had a big story on this not too long ago. Highly toxic. Polonium-210 is the name of the poison. It looks like the Israelis are pretty good at murdering people, working with various countries and various organizations. Hey, Ron Paul wants the Fed audited. That's nice. Even Mitt Romney says he doesn't mind that. Newt Gingrich, when he was running for president, said, yeah, we can audit the Fed. All these people before rejected that. Oh, no, we cannot do that. Oh, no, no, no. Now they all say, well, okay, since it appears that Ron Paul has a pretty big audience, and probably most of the rank and file of the Republican Party would like to see the Fed audited. And I'm talking about the Federal Reserve Bank, Federal Reserve System. Mitt Romney says, yeah, let's audit it. Now, a lot of people have asked me, Tex, do you think we'd audit it? No, I don't think we'd audit it at all. You know, Enron, the corporation that went bankrupt here in Houston, Texas, one of the biggest bankruptcies and scandals in the history of the world. They had auditor. In fact, their auditor was one of America's largest accounting firms. But they didn't seem to find anything going on wrong. And Bernie Madoff had auditors. And they came in, looked at his books, gave him the stamp of approval. $65 billion he stole. And anybody probably who took bookkeeping in high school should have been able to find $65 billion. But the auditors didn't. Folks, listen. The question is, not should the Fed be audited, but who should do the auditing? Now, you know the government is not going to allow anyone but their people in there to audit. Probably be done by the General Accounting Office of the Congress. Boy, you know they're honest. Like those Harvard students who cheated on the government 1310 course, Introduction to Congress. Well, the congressmen will make sure that we have a real fine audit of the Fed. And the auditing firm will probably be paid $20 or $30 million to do it. Of your taxpayer money. Out of your pocket. So do I think the Fed should be audited? Absolutely not. Ron Paul, don't waste our time. Don't you know better? I love Ron Paul, but he's not thinking. You don't want to audit the Fed. You want to end the Fed. If it doesn't exist, it won't need auditing. Take it, fold it up. Now, I think they've got a nice building. I've seen, you know, that building looks like an old Greek temple, the Fed building. I think it'd make a great building for, oh, I don't know, sell it to Walt Disney or somebody. Put a Walt Disney Museum. I don't know, sell it to private enterprise. Get rid of the building. In fact, They have these spread out in all these, nine different regions around the United States. They have big fancy bank building. Sell those at auction. That's where we can make some money. Sell the Fed its buildings, its real estate. Mr. Bernanke, I have a real good job for him. The Humane Society here in Austin, Texas needs shovelers to clean out the pens and everything. I think Ben, give him a nice, red, because he's a commie, give him a nice red jacket and red pants and big brogans. Give him a shovel and a wheelbarrow and give him an $8 an hour job. That's all he deserves. He's cheated us out of trillions. Why should we pay more than $8 minimum wage an hour to shovel manure out of a doggy bin? No. Do not audit the Fed. End the Fed. It was a grand experiment from 1913 to today. The Illuminati, Colonel E. Mandel House, and President Woodrow Wilson conspiring with the Jews in Wall Street gave us the Fed. Andrew Jackson, president, when he got into office, he killed the Federal Bank, which was the equivalent of today's reserve. And they asked him, what was the proudest accomplishment of his presidency? He said simply, I killed the bank. There you go. Now there's, whether it's Obama or Mitt Romney, I'd like to see them get up before the State of the Union message and say, I am proud. I killed the Fed. Now that would be a day. To audit it? No, some auditing firm, some crooked auditing firm will get $20 or $30 million and they'll come out and say, oh, we found a few little things here and there and we've slapped the wrist of Mr. Bernanke, but overall, it's a wonderful organization being done honestly and, oh, yes. Oh, come on. Too much. Hey, over in Germany, they're not very happy. And I can't believe it. Just like in America, 16 U.S. intelligence agencies are warning Americans in a new draft report. And I've talked about that. All 16 U.S. intelligence agencies are warning America that Israel is a rogue criminal state, and that our support financially, diplomatically, militarily of Israel is a great, great mistake. That our national interests are involved here. And you see, that's what's happening with all these demonstrations going on in the Middle East. Why are they demonstrating and attempting to kill American ambassadors and consuls and officials? Why not the British? Why not French? Why not Japanese? Why not the Russians? Why? How about Indonesia or China? Why are the Arab Muslims so angry at America? You see, our president, our leaders, our congressmen won't even tell you why they're so angry at us. They're angry at us because the Israeli Mossad and the Israeli government has been killing Muslims for decades now, in particular the Palestinians and the Lebanese that are right next door within their midst, in fact. And they're sick and tired of the Israeli Mossad. They're the true terrorists in the Middle East, and they've been rampant, going about ravaging, killing, and we have helped them with our drone aircraft, our helicopter gunships. We have gone over there and conquered Afghanistan, Libya, Iraq for no reason. Now, folks, I have a theory, but I believe it's true. I believe I can document it. And here it is. If you stick your finger in someone's eye, they will get angry and they will want to stick their finger back in your eye. Ron Paul called it blowback. Well, of course. You have an enemy, you go hit him on the head with a baseball bat. Don't be surprised if the next night when you're out for a nice afternoon walk or jog, somebody steps from behind a tree and hits you over the head with a baseball bat. If we got out of the Middle East and let those countries take care of themselves, then they wouldn't want to kill us. And let me just tell you something else. If any other country in the world had invaded America and were occupying this country and were using drones to kill Americans in Toledo and Ventura, California, and Atlanta, Georgia, and Houston, Texas, and Tampa, Florida. If they were doing it, the Russians, let's say, or the Brazilians, I sort of think the Americans would be mad at them, don't you? And we'd be doing a lot of demonstrating and rioting at their embassy. And I suspect there would be some Americans who have lost their family members to these drone attacks by the Russians or the Brazilians or the Chinese, who would want to kill the Chinese ambassador or the Russian ambassador in revenge. Folks, we have killed in Iraq alone. We slaughtered over 1 million Iraqis, and we think they will applaud us and say thank you for democracy. There is no democracy over there. There's no democracy in Libya or any other country we've gone into. Afghanistan is run by a bunch of thugs. We always put thugs in office. America, our CIA, our military. Our thugs are no better than the other thugs that were already in office before we got there. In Pakistan now, they're a proud people, and we're over there massacring them with our drone. We don't even know who we're killing with the drones. It's interesting. Did you know that before the 1940s, all the Muslim countries considered America their friend? Americans were always safe when they went to those Muslim countries, other than the normal, you know, robbers or whatever. And Christian churches prospered and flourished in places like Egypt, Iraq. Can you imagine that? Christians were welcomed. American tourists were welcomed. Our diplomats were held as good people by the Egyptians and the Libyans and the Iraqis. They were, many of them were our allies even. Now, there's 54 Muslim countries, and almost every one of them hate us, despise us. And why shouldn't they? If they were in our country doing these things, we'd be mad. You say, well, wait, 9/11, 19 Arabs did that. Folks, you need to get the book by Victor Thorne. Israel did 9/11, and they're stirring up the pot again over the Middle East. That's what's really happening over there. Israel is stirring up the pot. Well, been great being with you today, looking through some secrets, pontificating about a few things. You know, sometimes, Jerry, I just get a little mad. I get mad at killers. I'm a tender-hearted guy. I must tell my audience out there, I don't hunt. You know why I don't hunt? I can't bear to kill an animal. Send a text, that's unreasonable. I'm sorry, that's the way it is. I don't hunt. I pet every dog I can and every cat. And as far as torturing or killing a human being, even after 20 years in the Air Force, he better really deserve it before I pull the plug on him or whatever. He better really, really deserve it. I believe in being humane. I believe in being kind. And I don't believe in an eye for an eye. I believe in Jesus' principle of love. And I think that would go a long way, rather than bombing and killing, to extend a friendly hand. You say that's unrealistic? Maybe. Then I'm an unrealistic man. I'm Tex Mars. I'd like to hear from you on that accord. What do you think? Am I unrealistic? Because I believe in what Jesus said? Write to me and let me know. And tune in each week and discover the power of prophecy.